Hello and welcome in to the Rebel Room. I am Taylor Byrne alongside colleague, boss, friend, guy in an orange sweatshirt, Ray Brewer, the Rebel high school expert extraordinaire of all things, and the perfect man to get into this today as we come to you. The first time that we've talked since became official, Bobby Hauk, I'm putting air quotes on resigning at UNLV, the decision made, I think, from all sides that it was time for something else. And that came out Friday at 4 p.m. the day before the Battle for the Fremont Cannon. Rebels came out pretty good for a while in that game, actually led at the half, and then just got completely annihilated. Even the final score is escaping me, I think 49-27. Right around there. It just got completely out of hand. And as I wrote on the final gamer of the season, I mean, this final quarter of the Hauk era was like most of the ones before it, played, in front of a mostly empty stadium with not anything real to play for on the scoreboard. Ray, we'll get back to it first. Were you surprised at the decision, surprised at the timing? What did you think when, because we got the notification basically at the same time that they Bobby was going to be resigning after 5 years.
I wasn't surprised that Bobby was no longer going to be the coach, because I think we all knew that was coming. I was sort of surprised that he resigned, because if they fired him, they would have had to pay more.
Yeah, so he receives a one-time, and this was agreed upon, this was announced on Friday with the resignation, which just for technicalities becomes official today, Monday. So now is Bobby Hauk's last day, and now UNLV moves forward. But they are paying him a one-time payment of $400,000. If they had fired him, it would have been a buyout of $700,000 paid over 2 years, which was the remainder of his contract, or the length was. And $700,000 is half of what he would have been owed. So it does it works for both sides, I think, is why the resigning, he gets to say that he's leaving, and I think they all came together. Look, he and Tina, the athletic director at UNLV, Tina Kunzer Murphy, were friends before. They were both in those positions. So I think there was just a mutual understanding. And there's, a possibility that Bobby returns to Montana.
Yeah, this was as clean of a breakup as I've seen in college sports.
Yeah.
Both sides, the university and the coach, had nothing but positives to say about each other. The team went out and played hard in the last game. I think you were like me, wondering why announce it before that last game, because some of the players – might not respond, but they responded and they put forth a great effort. I thought at halftime they were going to win the game.
I've seen enough games that I never thought that they were going to win it. But I was impressed with what they were doing to that point. There had only been a few kind of major errors, and especially with losing Boyko in the first quarter for as long as they did. He came back, I think it was still in the third when he got back out on the field, but after what he called an armbar, where the guy Rakeem from UNR tried to break his arm, according to Boyko, after a play, and he was ejected from that. So it was an emotional game from, you could see the weight has been off of Bobby's shoulders for a while. He knew. He absolutely knew. The time that it first really stood out to me was at BYU after that game. You could just tell that he knew that this was the end.
Yeah.
And that he was trying not to sweat it as much.
And he'd been great, as good as he could be, especially under Bobby standards. I mean, it wasn't like he gave us great access to the program.
As far as you mean just handling.
Yeah.
I mean, he was almost always with us, mature-ish, even in losses, things like that. After the San Jose State game this year, he kind of blew up and then composed himself and came back. Because the line of questioning was immediately about, his staff and his guys and, the job stuff. And that's, a lot of people handle that differently. And he didn't care for it at the time. But overall, look, I've heard so many different things. I actually got, another email after kind of all of our last stories is Bobby, he brings in the players. And every player I've talked to has, nothing but good things to say about him. But at the same time, what is a player supposed to say about his coach? And the guys he brought in at the end, for his final press conference, of course, we're going to have tremendous things to say, is Devontae Davis and Brett Boyko, who, I mean, he's transformed their careers. Those guys can now go get paid to play football. And Bobby Hauk, was a big part of that transformation and that ability. So I get that. But I did hear from some people, look, Bobby was hard on these guys. A lot of times was not understanding of even small missteps, was just, I mean, a lot of the things that you think of as far as an overbearing coach, he had a lot of those qualities. I've heard a lot of those stories. But publicly, he always, at UNLV for the most part, always handled himself well. And at the end, I feel like, to your point, kind of this last stretch here, this last month where everybody's known the writing's been on the wall, he's, you know, kind of acceptance, I guess, of the stages of grief. Yeah.
But Bobby the football coach was very much old school. He was demanding. He was a guy who would push the limits. You know, I've heard stories, players that played at Bishop Gorman, he thought, you know, were coddled, or that they had everything, and he even ridiculed them during practice. And that, you know, it's just an example. It goes back to, you know, I'm 10 years older than you, but, you know, in high school when we'd have the hell run, and, you know, if you stopped to get a drink of water, you were looked down upon. And, you know, now, of course, with everything we know about hydration and safety, that wouldn't be seen, but you could tell that, you know, that was the era that Bobby had come from.
Yeah, and that's very much, the type of coach that he tries to be, that he is to a lot of degrees. And I think
– and some players, they really take it well.
Yeah,
other players,
it works
though,
for some and it doesn't for others.
Other players in this day and age, I think you get coddled now in the youth system growing up, especially if you're talented, that you've never had somebody get in your face like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's also people who just in all facets want to be treated like a human. You know, and that's, and a lot of times coaching, specifically what we think of as, you know, kind of football coaches, is degradation. It's humiliation sometimes. And that's, I'm not saying that Bobby did that any more or less than anyone else. You know, it's just kind of the hard-nosed, old school, you know, those type of cliches, what you think of when I say that. Bobby had a lot of those qualities. And at certain places, you can get that to work. At others, you can't. Here, you know, everybody's kind of had stuff fail. Basically, and there'll be, you know, more that we can talk about Bobby as he moves on to his next step, what that ends up being. But as for UNLV, it could end up being a very quick decision here. Take us, Ray, through the timeline as you know it, because for everyone kind of hearing these numbers thrown around and hearing the rumors really come up, not until basically Friday, with Tony Sanchez at Bishop Gorman and the possible money from the Fertitta. This is something you and I, specifically you, have heard about, we've been talking about for weeks now.
So UNLV clearly needs a makeover, something that Tina Coons Murphy told you on Friday. And she's been in talks with the Fertitta family. They own the UFC. They own Station Casinos, about making a sizable donation. And Tony Sanchez, the coach at Bishop Gorman, where – their sons have played, where they graduated, where the football stadium's named after them, where they've poured millions of dollars into building a number one ranked national football team, has emerged as the leading candidate to become the head coach. Some believe he's the only candidate to be the head coach. Put one-on-one together, you could see where Tony Sanchez, who is a phenomenal, phenomenal high school coach, super organized, super detailed, motivates, can't say enough about the guy, where he would now become the UNLV coach, and the Fertittas would give some money to get UNLV on par and over par of some of the schools it competes against.
I want to get back to Sanchez in a second, but for the timeline here, just kind of how this is going down, because basically, and we talked to President Don Snyder up in the press box on Saturday too, you know, they've had plausible deniability. They're not talking directly, you know, Tina and Don are not going directly to Lorenzo and these. It's kind of back channels talks. It's the things that happens in any big business, let alone, you know, you think of it college athletics, but this is just business, basically trying to set up what potential deals there are. And look, Sanchez's name has been around basically as long as I've been around, because my first year was at the end of, you know, another 2-win season, and then my first full season was the third straight 2-win season, and there were talks of Tony then, not only because he's, you know, got that Gorman program, you know, as good now as it was then, but, you know, contentious relationship, I think, between Bishop Gorman and UNLV. In a lot of ways, you talked about it with the practice from UNLV's end. I don't think Bobby recruited Gorman hardly at all.
Never showed up at Gorman.
Partially, because I think so many people were telling him, or he heard, you know, Sanchez is better.
Yeah, and he's on deck to take your job.
Yeah, I think he's heard that. I think he was sick of that, and I think that may have affected his ability to get players in to a degree. I don't think that was like the thing, but that's backstory to the fact that I think UNLV has known that this is a possibility for a while, as far as if you go the Sanchez route, and they can't, you know, it's not going to be like in Sanchez's contract that, you know, as soon as you sign this, we get $30 million or, you know, whatever from the family, but it's, you know, it's agreed upon, it's understood, and getting some better on-campus facilities. I'm not talking about a stadium because that whole thing is tabled for now, but just a training facility, something. This is the main thing that I agreed with Tina about in just our talks Friday. It's like when you bring a basketball player into the Mendenhall Center, they get it. Like, you can look around and be like, okay, this place cares about winning here, and they're going to be trying hard. When you walk into Elite Athletic Complex, I mean, what do you think?
Looks like an office building in the middle of the city with the worst carpet I've ever seen.
Yeah, I love how much you hate the carpet. Yeah. But anyway, so that's looking like the route. Now, there have been other names thrown around at least a little bit. Utah's associate head coach, T. Martin at USC, who was a quarterback at Tennessee not that long ago. But it really does seem like this is going to be, as soon as Sanchez and Bishop Gorman wrap up their season in Reno this weekend, it seems like it's going to be a very quick move here.
And if you're UNLV, you'd be crazy not to accept the help from the Fertittas.
I mean, yeah, the money
is a game,
the money is
a
the
game
main
changer,
thing.
Yeah.
And this is what our friend Steve Cofield had me on Saturday pregame for the basketball game. By the way, UNLV basketball won by 16 over the weekend against Albany, and they play Wednesday at Arizona State.
Running with the Rebels.
So he asked me, you know, why is this like just a such a foregone conclusion that bringing in Sanchez would bring the Fertitta money and all that stuff? And I'm, you know, my point is it's not. I think it's understood that that's what would happen. But more important, and the follow-up question then is, why is Sanchez a guy? If you just – because I think it's – a lot of places would be hard sell, especially coming off of having a Division I AA coach that you bring up and it doesn't work, going to then a high school coach. But my point is, over the next 5 years, that money, if that's what comes with hiring Tony Sanchez, is so much more important than whatever you accomplish on the field. Because guess what? Almost any competent coach that you plug in there is going to be able to win 15 games in 5 years.
Yeah.
Bobby's production just was not there.
Jim Strong, Mike Sanford, John Robinson, like Jeff Horton.
So it's not going to get worse on field. And if the money does come, then it can get significant better off the field, significantly better. And that's how you set up actually building a place where you can win 5 to 7 games every year. It doesn't – UNLV, you know, the bar can be so mediocre and be okay. If you're just – if a bad year is four wins, like, can you just get into that – can you be middle? Can you be average? That's all UNLV needs, and this would help a lot because it's – it shouldn't be that hard to get to average.
And you look at the league is down. At UNLV, you win 7 games, they put you in the Hall of Fame. At Nebraska, you win 9 games, they fire you. And I think what's being overlooked in this is a lot of folks are like, okay, Sanchez is going to be the new coach, and he's going to bring that money, and so it's a home run, even though he's a high school coach. And I've been around the guy enough. I think he would do a good job regardless. I've drank in the Sanchez Kool-Aid, but the guy is just so detailed and organized, and I've seen him go around and give these coaches clinics at colleges, and he just has people mesmerized the way he does things. You know, practices are going to be energetic. There's going to be music. It's going to be fast-paced. UNLV's going to have an opportunity to do something special, and kids are going to get fired up, and I think this guy really is a game plan in place. Now, of course, has he coached in a college game? You know, he was a grad assistant briefly. There's going to be a learning curve. He's going to have to go out and get help. But he knows that. He's smart enough to know that. And now he's going to have the resources to go out and pay some guys to help him out.
Yeah, staff is huge with that, especially as a first-time college coach, just kind of getting some veterans in place. And the word is that the guy I would pick over any other to keep off of Hauk's staff is who is most likely to stick around, is Cedric Cormier, who I think is going to end up being a head coach somewhere. You can just watch him practices. Like, that's the guy who stands out to you. And so we'll see how this develops. You'll be up in Reno, correct, covering the – is that Saturday?
Saturday at noon, yeah.
And what's kind of the outlook for that? Gorman favored by 40?
70-ish.
Yeah.
They know – in fact, when I was interviewing some of the kids after the semifinals on this past week, they were like, yeah, we know we got to win and win big to impress the national championship voters.
Yeah.
So the kids totally get it. They're – you know, one win away from number one, and they're going to come out so ready to go, and the Reed players are just going to roll over. It's going to be very quick.
You're going to enjoy it, aren't you?
I can't wait.
Like I said, basketball defeated Albany 75-59 this past Saturday, the first game of that basketball-football doubleheader. A solid performance. Albany didn't hit any threes in the second half, which they're a small lineup, and they had been good at threes coming into the game. That was their only route to sticking close, and they weren't able to do that as Rashad Vaughn took over, scored 29. Chris Wood was good again, had his fourth double-double in the first five games. Dwayne Morgan was a nice spark off the bench. Kind of.
I got a question for you about
his offense dialed in. Let's hear it.
I expected more from him. Is that wrong of me?
I mean, I think he's rounding into shape a little bit. His offensive game, he takes bad shots. Like, that's – he's still in that mode where he just pulls up when you're like, why would you do that?
Do you think it would be different if – I understand
– They're also playing them out of position.
You need to have Kendrick in the starting lineup.
You don't need to have Kendrick in the starting lineup.
Well, then, do you think that Morgan would be better
if they're trying to play him at four. The people have been bringing this up all year. If they switch what he's playing, then yes. But they're trying to have him be a power forward this year because they're so shallow down there. They need rotation in with Chris Wood and Good Luck Okonobo at the 4-5. So you can slide Wood over to the 5, and then you have Morgan as, honestly, like your next biggest player eligible since Ben Carter has to sit out this year. And so that's kind of why he's there. Otherwise, I mean, he's a more natural 3, although he can't shoot right now, so you can't even – say that offensively, but just as far as the positions that he'd be guarding offensively, more facing the basket. And that's even kind of the looks that he gets out of the four, but that's the main reason for that. He's gotten about starters minutes close to it, and that's how it's going to be.
I just thought mentally there's a difference between running out.
For some guys there is, yeah.
Okay.
That's definitely true, and we'll see with that. I think you go with McCaw as the 3. That's what I predicted before the season would be the eventual lineup, and then you have Kendrick and Morgan with your second rotation. Morgan as like your first guy off the bench, and man, Kendall Smith just completely. Part of it's the ankle, part of it's more than that. He has very quickly fallen out of favor here, and I think a lot of that has to do with attitude. And he looked really good in practice preseason as far as just understanding how to set up the offense, and yet in any games that he's played so far this year, he's done the same thing that he did last year, and I bring it up all the time, just sprinting in the lane, jumping up with no idea where to go with it. So hopefully for his sake that ankle's healthy and he can kind of get out of the doghouse here as Pat McCaw has taken over the clear lead for backup point guard.
Pat McCaw's good.
I like him
a lot.
He's
nice, and I tell you what, he gets the loose balls, man.
Yep,
he's just. I don't know if he's quick or if he wants it more, or he's in the right place.
He's quick. He's looking for it. He does lunge a lot. He goes after steals, and that's that's going to get you burnt every once in a while. But I think overall, right now, UNLV's okay with that. They want to be aggressive. They want to try and create some opportunities there, and so you just have to accept that risk that comes with it. But he's been really solid. Rashad Vaughn, obviously a lot better.
Also, I want to see Friday. They play St. Catherine, a lower classification
school.
Yeah,
at Orleans Arena.
A lot of kids are going to get to play in the game, and I cannot wait for Dantley Walker to score his first buckets because the place will go crazy, and they will retire his jersey after the game.
I think he already got a shot.
No, I don't think he scored
yet. He hasn't hit a three, I know.
No, no, I don't think he scored, period.
He may not have.
Because I type in the stats.
Okay.
100%.
I was thinking there was one where he's taken a couple of shots, but
I think he's 0 for 3.
Gotcha.
But nonetheless.
That place will erupt. Anyway, so that's on the horizon for UNLV Athletics. I think by the time we talk to you again next week, we may even have the answer at the head coach position. It may take a little longer than that. We'll see. And obviously, I mean, this is still as confident as we are in this. This is still speculation. There's no ink to paper. Things can always change. But it does look like UNLV will be going with the Tony Sanchez for Tita Money route, and we should have an answer sooner than later. And just get going with UNLV football, and as basketball kind of keeps progressing here, heading into. I guess technically a lull in the schedule before that big stretch starting with the Utah game December 20th. But for Ray, I am Taylor. This is the Rebel Room, and we'll talk to you guys next week. So how you like me? How you like me?